Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vapidez.
Ladies and gentlemen, just wait for it. Just wait for it. Just wait for it.
It's TLD.
Yeah.
Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
Folks, it's phenomenal what I do. You get to lay on TLD.
Buy everything, Dennis. I'm TLD. Brand new deals that we have at TLDWrestling.com. I love this stuff.
TLD merchandise only available at where? That's right, TLDWrestling.com.
That's right, there's only one place to buy TLD merchandise, and that is at TLDWrestling.com. But tonight is not about me. It's about Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. And we are here to talk about TNA's lockdown that just went off the air. What a pay-per-view offering from TNA this year, their first one of 2014 from Miami, Florida, where they have beautiful weather unlike us here in Jersey. But if you want to call in and you want to talk about the show, please call this number. It's 760. It's the area code 888-5749. Use hashtag PWP Radio. That way we can get your tweet live on the air. If you want to talk about anything that occurred tonight for this show called TNA Lockdown, please get on the damn Twitter. Just type in some stuff, but make sure you use that hashtag PWP Radio. I'm going to bring in the co-host of the most. It is Mr. Tofi. Tofster, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. Just had a very interesting experience tonight.
Oh, you had an interesting experience. You want to tell the masses about this amazing experience. Now, was it man or woman?
Oh, both.
Oh, both. Okay, that's perfect. You know, nothing says lockdown like a threesome.
Yeah, I'm not really much of a drinker. I don't really drink and stuff, but I was out with some friends, and right now, there's like a new neighborhood that my mom and I are considering to move to, and there's a lot of sports bars there, and we went to one sports bar, TGI Fridays, and to my surprise, they actually had, they were going to air Lockdown, and I was like, you know, I've never actually watched, I don't know about you, but I haven't really watched a wrestling pay-per-view with friends in a very long time. I usually watch it in the privacy of my own home, so this was like really the first time I got to watch a pay-per-view with friends in a long time, and much, you know, a TNA pay-per-view. I'm like, you know, sometimes sports bars have like UFC pay-per-views or really big WWE pay-per-views, but it was showing a TNA pay-per-view, and not only was I able to watch it with my friends, it actually had a pretty decent turnout. A lot of folks showed up just to watch Lockdown and eat, and to my surprise, there were about three female legit wrestling fans. I talked to one particular female. She was like 26 years old, and she had been watching like since 1997. She knew about the Attitude Era and all that stuff. I was just surprised to see. You know how it is? You know, you just kind of like, it's one of those moments where you're just going out and you don't expect to run into any wrestling fans, and then you run into some. You know, it's just kind of cool. You know, just being a wrestling fan, a lot of times it's kind of annoying because you got to defend wrestling when you're in public. So it was kind of a nice change of pace to actually watch a wrestling pay-per-view with other fans that are passionate about it, and I have to be arguing, you know? It was kind of positive. It was cool.
You know, I got a positive note too, man. I just let one go, and it felt great.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that's a cool thing to hear that they have one of those hot spots. What do they call those things? They don't call them hot spots. What do they call them? What does WWE call them? Hot zones? What do they used to call them?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. So that's pretty cool that they actually are showing that at a TGI Fridays. That's actually kind of interesting that they would show that and that they had a good turnout. That's good. That's always a good sign that they're doing that. You know, they're doing that here with WWE a little bit around the area. You know, I'm sure the network can make this a little bit easier on a lot of those areas that want to do that. But, you know, they're not always they don't always last, or you really can't find a place. So the place we used to go to did it for a year. I don't think the turnout was as big as it could be, and it just never worked out. But anyway, moving forward tonight, we're going to talk about TNA Lockdown, but off the air. Pretty big show tonight with a lot of surprises. I have to say, they definitely pulled a lot of great surprises out of this show, and we'll go through a bunch of them. But we're going to start off with our six-man tag team match. Now, I do not know how to mention these two guys' names, but the Great Muta was in it. But also, I'm going to try to do this as best I can. Shanda and Yasu, am I right, from Wrestle 1?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? All right. Well, I just want to make sure. Went against the team of Bad Influence and Chris Sabin. And Bad Influence, was it just me or they look like the Three Ninjas?
Yeah, yeah. They had some type of symbol on their uniform, as it kind of looked like the symbol off the old X-Men comic book. They like to rep a lot of nerdy stuff on their attire. So
they do rip off. Yeah, they do rip off a lot of stuff. I thought tonight I saw Colt and Tum Tum go to the ring as Bad Influence, and it was hashtag tremendous. And Chris Sabin, of course, acting like a douche, you know, but it was a great tag match. Muta got a lot of positive response. I believe Shanda is the actual new X Division champion, defeating Austin Aries overseas, winning that championship belt. I think it was only, a couple of days ago. So now they're putting some influence on a new star being the X Division champion. And just having Muta there adds that nostalgic look to the entire match. And Muta, Shanda, and Yasu win the match. What are your thoughts on that six-man inter-promotional tag match?
Oh, it was a fun opener. It was a fun tag match. It was cool seeing Muta again. It's nice to see TNA working on the international relations and stuff like that. I hope this continues. I hope this just isn't, you know, like for lockdown publicity. I hope it continues. International exposure is good for everybody. It's a win-win. It's a good for international fans. It's a good for American fans. It's good for TNA. It's good for WWE. It's good for everybody. It was a fun six-man tag. I would like to see more of this in the future. But more importantly, it definitely gives more space to the X Division. You know, TNA's got to work on the X Division. That's the main thing that got fans really hooked in TNA to begin with. And getting a lot of Japanese talent, among other international ways, is really a good place to start. But, yeah, it was a fun opener, and it was nice to see Muta in his green mist. You know, that was great. I marked out for that.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of different colors of mist actually coming out of him tonight. But, yeah, definitely a good opening match. You know, six very solid wrestlers, some good chain wrestling to start off the show. I really did enjoy that opener. I think that was the right way to start the whole show off, and the fans just really got into it. You know, they didn't use too much of the cage, which I thought was another good thing. They could have easily flown from the top rope and done some big stuff from the top of the cage, but they saved that till the end. And I thought that was a very good, solid opener to showcase some of the international talent, that maybe just that recognition. But now they're going to have Shanda beaten TNA, and hopefully they'll get an X Division going again. But, of course, you have Bad Influence and Chris Sabin, three guys that can definitely be a part of that X Division. Moving forward, Samuel Shaw, as we have heard now known as the hashtag creepy bastard, went against Mr. Anderson. And by the way, Samuel Shaw, we're going to get to that later, but if Christy didn't come down to the ring, he was ready to commit suicide. Yeah, apparently. So, but of course, Mr. Anderson pointing out very clearly that would have only probably hurt his leg, not really killed him. But it was it's a good story, and it's a good character that Samuel Shaw is doing right now, and just doing some really cool things, especially when they pull Christy into the cage through the open hole that they have. So I know the idea of a cage match is to keep people from getting into the ring, but those holes are quite large. So it makes it very easy for someone to get through that ring. which I think is a little strange. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, they have the holes in the cage. Do you think that's needed?
Yeah, that's really the only negative about the lockdown concept in general. If you want to be old school about it, the whole point of a cage is to keep you in the cage and to keep everybody else out of the cage. But lockdown's so confusing because some matches stay in the cage, and then some matches it's like they get out the cage and they get back in the cage, and then some matches you escape the cage to win, and other matches you got to stay in the cage to win. That's probably the most confusing thing about lockdown. It's very confusing for old-school cage fans. The rules just change match per match. The holes are pretty different. They're unique. It's a great way for the cameras to get the really good, you know, camera shots for the crazy spots. Christy must be very skinny to fit through that hole. I never actually thought a person could fit through it. That was very strange.
Yeah.
I never really thought. I mean, I always thought someone could fit through it, but I figured you would have to be very skinny to do so, and Christy did it. So, but yeah, I like the Samuel Shaw character. It's very different. It's entertaining. Every time I see him, I just can't help but think about that Christian Bale movie, American Psycho. I know Jay, it reminds him of that Dexter dude. I don't watch Dexter, but I've heard stories about it. But, yeah, it's just a pretty funny thing. I think Anderson, you know, Anderson I've always been hit or miss on. To me, he's always either really good or just kind of like, eh. To me, I like him infused like this because he's kind of – Anderson sort of has that dry sort of humor thing going for him, and sometimes it comes off as corny, but in this case it's funny. Like when he calls him a creepy bastard and the fans start chanting creepy bastard, it's just funny. It reminds me like back in 2003, I think when Stone Cold called Christian a CLB, creepy little bastard, and fans were just chanting CLB at Christian and just kind of stuck for a while. It's a funny, entertaining mid-card feud. You know, no title is involved. It gives Christy something to do. And, you know, it's a good way to get Samuel Shaw over some exposure, you know, and it's in what good way than to work with Mr. Anderson. It gives him something to do, too. If the match was okay, you know, it was what it was. You know, I'm sure this feud will continue. But it was cool. It was cool. I got no problems with this angle.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, each cage match had, like, their own, like, stipulation where, like, this one was an escape only. There was no pinfalls in the match. And we'll get to the other ones where they were all just kind of different in their own way. So, which I thought was another good idea from this year, what they just did, that each cage match had their own little stipulation involved. This one was escape only. Anderson did get out of the cage first, but because Samuel Shaw pulled Christy into the ring, that's what prompted Anderson to get in the ring again to try to defend him, but he choked him out, and Shaw walked away as a victor, which I agree that Shaw should have definitely won the match. So that was definitely the right way to go. Very good. I thought it was a good match. You know, it did show Mr. Anderson was the better wrestler because obviously he took him out. But, of course, Shaw was a better manipulator. I think that's what made this a little bit different. And it's a simple feud. I like a feud that's just simple with two good characters. You know, Anderson just standing up to the, you know, following someone standing up to what Shaw's doing. And Shaw gets away with it and wins, and I think it's good. I like the way he does his submission, you know, adding that little something to it to make it really special, that he tells him to basically be quiet as he's taking him out. So I think Shaw's getting over as a good character. Do you think it's going to be Anderson going forward, or do you think it's going to be just him still trying to get to Christy and someone else will intervene?
If anything, see, what I thought was going to happen was I thought we were going to get a finish similar to Christian Jericho at WrestleMania 20, where Christian was basically being a CLB to Trish and Chris was defending her honor. And if you remember in the end, like, it was revealed that Trish was really with Christian all along and they were just sort of tricking Jericho. I thought that Christy was going to screw over Mr. Anderson and, like, Christy and, like, and Samuel Shaw will be a couple at the end. That's what I thought they were going to go, but they didn't go that route. I would like to see it because I always thought Christy was an entertaining heel. I guess she wasn't comfortable being a wrestler. I guess she wanted to be more of a backstage person. That's cool, too. I do think at some point, you know, Mr. Anderson, he'll get his win. I mostly see this mostly as just kind of an introductory kind of way to get Samuel Shaw over on television, and we'll just see where it goes from there. But they'll definitely have another match. Probably, maybe on Impact or something like that.
Yep. Well, it could possibly be that way. We hope, definitely hope going forward that they are able to develop the Shaw character, I think, even further. But one thing that was supposed to happen that didn't was Kurt Angle was supposed to fight Ethan Carter III, but we found out that because of the surgery that Angle has to have, that match had to get canceled. However, Ethan Carter did get in the ring and claims to be the All-American wrestler and the All-American icon until we had a huge surprise as an open challenge, which I did not see coming. Bobby Lashley comes back to TNA and gets in the ring with Ethan Carter, but Carter kind of just backs out of the ring. This was a no contest. What were your thoughts when Bobby Lashley came down? I did not see Bobby Lashley coming out of that as an open challenge.
Okay, three things. One, did you see the
three
signs
things.
When he came to the ring and the guys in the front row had the trouble?
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yes, yes.
EC3
seemed
so
addicting.
The trouble is getting over. I'm telling you, EC3, he's going to be like a smaller indie version of Daniel Bryan, which is funny because Daniel Bryan comes from the indie scene himself. That trouble thing is so addicting. And to all our listeners out there, if you don't watch TNA, just go to YouTube and just put in EC3 theme. It's like so bad it's good. It's addicting. This guy just keeps saying trouble.
It's on my iPhone.
Yeah, it's like every single time EC3 said something, the guys in the front just kept saying trouble. That shit's going to get over. If they keep doing it, it'll get over. Secondly, I marked out when it was Lashley only because it wasn't Sting. I was worried that it was going to be Sting because he called out anybody from the roster, and Sting technically is still on the Impact roster page. I don't know what his case is. You know how I feel about Sting, hoping to see him on Post-Mania Raw. So I was hoping anybody but Sting. So when I saw Lashley, it was more of a pop for, yes, it's not Sting. Then it was like, wait, it's Lashley? As far as Lashley's concerned, great job, TNA, because, you know, normally – when somebody comes back, like, dirt sheets are all over that shit, you know? When WWE or Ring of Honor has, like, somebody coming in, I see it all over the dirt sheets. I didn't see any dirt sheet site reporting anything about Bobby Lashley. So great job, TNA, for keeping that secret. If anybody has a dirt sheet website that reported that, please send it to me because I didn't see one. So great job, TNA, for keeping that secret. I was a fan of Bobby Lashley. I didn't think TNA used them the best they could last time, and it seemed like when he was
really
finally going
– way doing it.
Yeah. And it seemed like when he was finally going somewhere in WWE, he left. He's one of those guys whose max potential was never really realized in either organization. You know, his charisma could be a little bit better, but he definitely has the look and the in-ring ability. I thought he was good. So hopefully TNA, I mean, I don't know if this is a one-night-only thing or if he's coming back for good. I don't know, but, you know, I mean, it's different. I mean, I'm glad to see Bobby Lashley. I mean, he's in good shape, so we'll have to see where it goes. But, yes, this match never started. It was a no contest. The bell never rung. And so, yeah, it was a nice surprise, though. No one saw that coming. If anyone says they saw Bobby Lashley coming, you're lying. No one saw that coming.
Yeah, I did not hear anything about it, but I think also not a lot of people were even watching or not caring. I think that's a big thing, too, that they care more about WWE and what they're doing, and they kind of forget about, you know, Lashley. I did not see Lashley coming out. In fact, when the music played, I forgot it was even him until I saw him actually come out of the ring. I was like, oh, yeah, Bobby Lashley. You know, so very interesting to see how he came out. I know he's been doing a lot of MMA, but definitely was a surprise that Bobby Lashley came out of nowhere. Good to see him. I don't think he'll be back permanently. I think that was just like a one-off thing. I think that may be the main thing with that. But is he from Florida? I think he is, right? I don't know if he is or he's not. But is he from that area?
I'll look that up right now. Just take a few seconds. I have no idea where he's
right.
from. Let's go.
Well, while you're doing that, we're going to go forward. Ethan Carter did not have that match, but I think when the time comes, when Kurt Angle comes back to action, I think it will be pretty good to see EC3 calling himself an American icon with a catchy theme against Kurt Angle. And Slammiversary has been announced as the next show. I forget the location. I know they announced it, but I could see that match happening right there. And I think it could be a nice build to a feud to do that. So, moving forward.
He's billed from Colorado Springs, Colorado, but he's actually from Kansas.
So. Yeah, well, he's not that close. So I would say that, you know, could be just a fly in for a one-off deal. You know, they did advertise Kurt Angle. They couldn't deliver that. So they probably just found a way to kind of cover it up, and they brought Lashley in, and I think that was a nice surprise. Anyway, so going forward, regular steel cage match, Tiger Uno against Manic. We saw the debut. We've seen a lot of promo videos, which TNA's been doing a good job doing a lot of promo videos lately. It's Tiger. How do you say Tiger? Tigre. Tigre. Thank you very much. I got the fiance right here figuring it out for me. Tigre Uno against Manic. What were your thoughts on Tiger Uno's debut?
This is actually the match I was looking forward to the most. And like you said, TNA's been doing a great job with their vignettes lately, because I know one of the biggest criticisms I've heard from a lot of spoiled WWE fans is they say that WWE, when they debut somebody, they do countless amounts of vignettes to the point that when they debut, you already know who they are. And they've been doing it with Willow. They were doing it with Tigre. They've been doing it with Kenny King. They're actually building up these guys like you should be doing. I'm a big fan of his work in New Japan Pro Wrestling and Wrestle One. I'm a big fan of TJ Perkins, so I was really looking forward to the match. It did not disappoint. Really, it was almost as if, like, I don't know about you, but when I was watching them wrestle, it was a strange feeling. It was almost as if, like, I had a strange feeling of deja vu, as if I had seen this before. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, this is the feeling I had when I watched guys like Rey Mysterio Jr. and Ultimo Dragon and Psychosis and La Paca and guys like that.
Really be very beneficial to make sure I know what the heck I'm doing right now. But moving forward, anyway, so Tigre Uno, is that how you say it? Tigre, my God, you know, Spanish is not one of my strong points, as you can see, which is kind of ironic because I do a masked character in Spanish, but, you know, it totally makes sense, I think. So Tigre, right? Tigre, okay. The Manic or whatever his video game character was. Anyway, I thought the match was pretty good. I thought it was a little slow-paced at times for guys who are Lucha Libre, but they still did a pretty cool job in the match itself, and I did enjoy it. So I would say I give it 2 thumbs up, still for the effort and still for having a good match. Oh, I might be back in the studio here. Let's see if I can get back on and get Toph in. Let's see here. Let's see if I get Toph, are you on the air, sir?
Yeah, I just having some static interference. Okay, cool.
Dude,
sorry about that. There was some static interference.
Dude, Blog Talk Radio is fucking up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. You know,
okay,
so what
okay.
am I supposed to do? You know, in fact, I see you in my queue twice. That's how messed up this is right now.
That sucks.
Yeah, well, it still works. So we want to hear your. I want to hear your results again on. What's the name again?
Tigre.
Tigre Uno. That's the name.
Tigre Uno.
I'm going to mess that up.
I'll sum it up short because I don't want Block Talk to mess up. Basically, I was saying that the match was good. I'm a big fan of both. And it was cool seeing them work. It reminded me of, Nitro back in 96, 97 when WCW was hot, how they always started off with Lucha Libre. Cruiserweight matches, you know, Rey Mysterio, Ultimo Dragon, Psychosis, La Paca, Super Crazy, guys like that. It was cool seeing, you know, that was the kind of vibe I got from that match, you know, because nobody really knew who American fans aren't really established with, you know, Tigre, and Manic's been off TV for a while. So it wasn't really cheering or booing anyone. It was really just kind of enjoying the match for what it was. And I would like to see more stuff like that in TNA. That stuff like that is all they need to get the X Division back on track. Kids love the mask thing, too. So it's a great way to get kids into it and the younger audience as well.
Yeah, you know, very, very interesting that, you know, they're starting to try to rebuild that X Division. You know, they're doing a lot of good things. And, you know, it's pretty interesting on how that, you know, how they're bringing in these characters. They developed a nice promo video for him, you know, and Manic hasn't been around for a while, so they're kind of reestablishing a former X Division champion. So a great effort by both those guys that they did. And, I didn't think it was that great because it really wasn't much of a story. I don't know. Did they tell – did Tigre Uno, was he announced that he was going to be in the match at this show?
What they did was they pretty much did a bunch of vignettes hyping his eventual debut. But they never really said what was going to happen on TV. They announced on the Impact Wrestling Facebook page and on the actual website that he was going to be debuting at Lockdown. So, no, there was really no real story there. So it was just a match.
Yeah, so that's the only part about it that I found that was interesting, that they could have easily, you know, done that. But I think they could have announced it ahead of time and they didn't do it. So that's the only thing I would have against it, that they didn't do that part of it. So that's just my only gripe on that, is that I think they could have got some hype into it to get the fans, you know, into having Tigre Uno and Manic as a match. But, you know, moving forward, big matchup, and probably people will consider the match of the night, at least maybe, Gunner against James Storm. This was a last man standing cage match. So I got to hear your thoughts. What do you think of Gunner and James Storm tonight?
Gunner to me is like pretty much what Cesaro is to everybody else. So many fans said Cesaro was boring last year, and now those same fans are now into him, and they can't really tell me why. Just for whatever reason, something's changed, and they like Cesaro. Gunner's the same for me. Gunner has always had a good shape. You know, he's always had a good athletic body. He's always been good in the ring, and his mic skills, whenever he did cut a promo, were always decent. But there was always something about him that just didn't interest me for whatever reason in the past. Because he's been on the Impact roster for quite some time. He's been there, like, since, like, late. I mean, I know he started off as, like, a security guard in that Immortal faction.
Right.
And then, you know, he was just kind of used randomly, sporadically throughout the years. But, you know, sometime around, like, 2013, he started to get used more. He has a tag team with James Storm. And for whatever reason, it's like now I'm starting to get into his character. I really liked it when he was cashing in his little briefcase during the UK Impact things, and they really went into his military backgrounds and stuff. And it wasn't one of those, oh, you know, this is cheesy, they're trying to get him to like us. You know, it was actually a pretty cool, genuine story, and I started to like him. And the UK fans, they liked him too. His matches are good. His chemistry is getting a lot better in the ring. He's getting a lot better. I like him. You know, like, he's not ready to be a main event guy, but you know, he's getting better. I like him. And James Storm, I mean, he's very criminally underrated. James Storm has had some great matches. I still remember his match with Bobby Roode at Bound for Glory. That was a great match. No one ever talks about that. But this match was cool. A lot of really vicious spots. The one that got me was when Gunner went for that headbutt and like Storm threw the chair right at his head. That was really nasty spot right there. I noticed that James Storm got a new theme, changed his look. He has that. I see he's slowly going back to that little redneck. Well, he was always a redneck, but he's slowly going back to that heelish redneck look he had way back in the early days of NWA TNA, which is cool because Storm was always better off as a heel, in my opinion. It's only a matter of time before him and Rude reform Beer Money, and I'm going to mark the fuck out when that happens. But, yeah, great match, easily match of the night. This feud's not over. It will continue, clearly. We'll probably see these two feud for a world title at some point before the year is over. So,
That's a pretty bold statement there, Mr. Tofi.
Yep.
That's all you got. Okay. But I thought my thoughts on this match, I thought having it start on the outside was a great way to start the show, at least, or a great way to start that match. You know, a lot of intensity, a good story behind these two. And I think for me, when Gunner was given a microphone and he was able to talk about his travels, you know, he had that moment inside the ring with James Storm and talked about, you know, what he's been through and what his family, you know, what he's done overseas and, you know, his battles with, you know, the Army and the National, you know, there's a lot of realism to his promo. That was the part. That is when I got into the character, and, you know, they kind of patched things up at that point, and that got me into Gunner. And then when he was cashing the title, had a great story built up with him. He talked about his father, you know, on camera crying, how good his son's doing. Man, you could honestly, like, you want to feel like these guys from overseas, they come back here, they sometimes have a very hard life, and you look at a guy like Gunner who's made a bigger deal out of this, you know, being in the Marine Corps and now, you know, losing friends, losing, you know, and seeing things that we would never imagine seeing. And, you know, talking about that on camera, it's a pretty realistic story, you know, and to see him you know, get that close to the world title, that, you know, you really wanted him to win that. You know, I mean, that's what got me into him, was Gunnar explaining his background story. Because we never got that story in when he first got into Immortal. There was nothing talk. There was nothing about that. And finally,
yeah, he was
talked about his. He got nothing in there. He was kind of like a jobber. And when the story came out, when he was talking about his family, his life right now, man, that's a very real story to me. And then when James Storm super kicked him and betrayed him, you felt bad, you know, that someone would do that to someone. Like he is a hero. He's, you know, he's helped defend the United States of America. And, you know, James Storm is always about America. He's an American guy. You know, so to do that to him, I thought there's a lot of realism to that story.
Yeah, it is. I like Storm's look. I always thought he was better as a heel. You could see he was growing the sideburns. His hair looked a little darker.
Definitely darker
than normal. It was longer as well. It definitely reeked of. It reminded me of how he used to look back in the like the post. America's Most Wanted before Beer Money days, when he was just sort of a heel doing his own thing, drifting. You know, this is cool. You know, I'm noticing there's a lot of Storm is by no means old, but I'm noticing today there's a lot of established talents that are just sort of turning heel, kind of randomly out the blue. James Storm, Christian, a few others. I'm all for it, you know, because really as baby faces, you've kind of done all you can do. There's a new generation of crops coming up. So the best thing you can do is really go heel. It's a great excuse to work with a lot of these new baby faces coming out. I'm all for it. I think Storm is better off as a heel. He was drifting as a face anyway. He never really, in my opinion, we've talked about it before, he never really recovered from that two-week reign as champion when Bobby Roode beat him. Like, he never really recovered from that. Like, they had a match at Bound for Glory, a great match. Storm won, but that was kind of the end of it. It just, you know, he never went anywhere after that. That was just the end of it. I think him going heel is the best option here. You know, him and Gunnar have a good feud here. I think Gunnar can definitely, if Gunnar keeps up this like what he's doing right now, like his matches and his character, I could definitely see Gunnar easily winning, like when we do the PWP awards. I could see him winning like biggest surprise of like 2014, because I don't think Gunnar was on anybody's radar this year, but he's actually improved quite crinkly. I think a lot of fans are into Gunnar, so. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing where this feud goes. And that was pretty good for a last man standing match in a cage. That seems like overkill on paper, but they made it work.
Yeah, you know, I did like some of the things they did. The chair to the face, very, very creative idea with that. The suplex into the chair is a very dangerous move to do. I think they pulled it off. And I think at the end when he was using the chair as the leverage to get up after that battle, which was smart because he didn't get up on his own will. He needed that chair. It's just little tiny details that you look at. And then I just love – I tell you about Gunnar, man, he does have that personality. But, man, when he's in that ring, he's got that adrenaline. I think that's what gets him going. And I think that makes him a very unique talent. And I think fans are going to get behind Gunnar. And I could see him going for the world title again sometime this year. We're going to move forward to the knockouts match. It was Madison Rayne against Gail Kim. There was a build to this, but I didn't think it was a very strong build. They talked a lot about their history, a lot of great history between them, and I think TNA does a good job bringing up a lot of the historic things they do. I don't know. I just wasn't feeling this match too much. What were your thoughts on the Knockouts match?
Yeah, more or less the same. You know, Rayne and Gail Kim, our former Knockout Tag Team Champions, you know, they have been BFFs. TNA, they mostly rely, like, on the previous stuff they've done, more so of the present. My beef with Madison Rayne is her character, the Queen Bee thing, is totally based off a heel persona. Her character, she thinks she's a queen. She thinks that she's better than everybody. You can't really be a babyface of that role. So it's very difficult for me to take Rayne seriously. Well, first and foremost, well, congratulations to her for having her baby. And she actually looks pretty good for someone that just had a baby, because I wasn't even aware that she had a baby until like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, really? Wow, she looks pretty good for someone that just had a baby. And but, yeah, other than that, like, the match was good. You know, Gail and Rayne always have good matches. But, yeah, the Knockouts division, that's another thing that TNA needs to work on. You know, their X Division is like, they're working on, like, we're seeing the signs of the X Division, you know, possibly going back to how it was. That Knockouts Division is very depleted. And right now, they're just kind of like on auto drive, not really much going on. You know, Gail's great, you know, but she can only hold a title by herself for so long. She can only carry the division for so long. I don't know what they're going to do there. I mean, I'm not really familiar with, I know there's Shimmer. I'm not too familiar with the independent woman organizations out there. But yeah, this match was okay. The wrestling was not bad by any means, but pretty much like you said, when you've seen it so many times, it's kind of hard to care. You know, it's like how many times did you see AJ and Caitlyn last year? Like, it was cool at first, but like after watching it like 50 times, you're kind of like, whatever. So, you know, I think maybe she'll challenge the Lady Tapa next, I guess. That'd be cool.
I just don't get why Lady Tapa is looked at as a bodyguard. They're already doing that at WWE, and they've been doing that longer in WWE. Why can't she just be her own person? She could kill Gail Kim. I don't understand why she's taking a back seat to Gail Kim. No, now that Gail Kim did lose this match, Lady Tapa's got to get into that spot, and she needs to be the champion. I think they need a strong heel champion, someone that looks so big and so powerful, and you just can't beat them. I mean, they don't have many. I mean, ODB and Lady Tapa, I think, would have a great feud. You know, they don't have too many women wrestlers anymore. Velvet's got kind of stuck
in timing,
right
now, too,
because
Lady Tapa debuted, like, right when Tamina, when they were doing the Tamina AJ thing in WWE,
right.
And I think like on TV now they're starting to show not signs of dissension, but there's definitely some seeds being planted, like at the Chamber pay-per-view where Tamina accidentally kicked AJ. So you know pretty soon those two are going to break up. So the awkward timing between Lady Tapa and Tamina is making it even more unusual to watch on Impact, especially because Impact, you know, they do a lot of tapings in advance, you know, so they can do stuff like, you know, like they'll tape like 8 Impacts in a row, but the stuff that happens won't debut, won't be on TV until like 2 months from now. So like to fans that are not aware of that, they'll look at Impact and they'll think, oh, well, TNA's copying WWE, when in reality it happened like, you know, weeks beforehand. So we'll just have to see. But I agree with you, though. I think Lady Tapa ODB could be a great, it could be a good Knockouts title feud. You know, hopefully we'll see where it goes.
Well, you know, also one person that's been missing too is Taryn Terrell, who had an amazing match with Gail Kim back at Lockdown, and I think they need to, not Lockdown, I'm sorry, I apologize, Bound for Glory, I believe that's where they had it, and they had an amazing match, which I do miss them. I do miss her. I know she had a baby as well. I'm sure she'll be back. I think the guy gave her a babyface run. She definitely fits a babyface profile. And I think that her and Lady Tapa does become the champion, or even if Madison Rayne turns heel and goes back to that, you know, queen profile, which I agree, I think that's, you know, it's, you know, she can't pull that off as a face. You know, we could see something there. Going forward, World Championship, Magnus against Samoa Joe. And this was a win by submission or knockout. So they kind of, again, a different idea for a cage match where they had a different stipulation on it. So your thoughts on Magnus versus Joe and the obvious interference of Abyss, who screwed Joe out of that match. Where do you see that going now?
Yeah, you kind of knew going in there was going to be a screwy finish. I mean, you can't win via pinfall. You can only win via submission or knockout. I mean, that's just like a huge red flag there. I can't see how you couldn't see a screwy finish coming. The match itself was fine. Joe and Magnus have always had good chemistry together. It was fine. Magnus got in reasonable offense. I like how there's actually blood in a world title match. That's nice to see. That still exists in, you know, other wrestling promotions and stuff. So that was cool. And, you know, the Abyss thing, I didn't see that coming. I thought Rockstar Spud or Dixie Carter would just come to the ring and, like, maybe, you know, give Magnus some type of foreign object and he'd knock Joe out that way. That's what I thought they were going to do, but they went ahead and they went, like, the 96 Undertaker route of Abyss dragging Joe down. And the Abyss thing I didn't really see coming. The last time we saw Abyss on Impact was, you know, that promo of Eric Young in the UK, and Impact, and Abyss said that he was going to leave and he was going to find someone that understood him. My original prediction was I thought that him and Willow were going to be a tag team, because it seems like Jeff, I don't know what Jeff Hardy is going to do, but it seems like they're trying to do this whole Jeff Hardy and Willow being two different people. I thought they were going to, like, try to do that. But I guess they're not going in that direction. Or maybe they will. Who knows? I don't know what they're going to do. I didn't see him joining Magnus. That's very unusual. I don't know what they're going to do here. Hopefully they don't put him in a suit. That's all I got to say. Well, yeah, he would kind of look ugly in a suit because he's missing teeth anyway. So, but, you know, Magnus, unfortunately, he has to go over. He's the paper champion. And, you know, they got to continue that storyline and stuff. I would have liked to have seen Joe win. He definitely deserves the win, but it is what it is. So, you know, Magnus retains. A decent match, but screwy finish. But I think we all saw that coming.
Yeah, you know, I definitely I knew Joe was not going to win this match based on the card placement. When you saw that this was not going to be the main event, then you knew, okay, well, you know, it's pretty obvious that Magnus was going to win. I did not see Abyss definitely not being involved. I definitely didn't see that coming. We didn't see him for a while, but when we saw the hole in the ring come out, I was like, ooh. I was like, when was the last time we saw that in wrestling? So it was good to see that part of it. Joe came out with like a bit of rage, and then, you know, Abyss basically screwed. But I thought it was really funny that Magnus just came right on top and used Joe's own submission hold, which clearly Joe was already knocked out, basically from the blows from Abyss. But he put the same submission on. He was like choking really hard, like he was really doing something. So I thought that was actually quite funny that Magnus was doing that. I don't know the connection here. We're going to have to wait till Impact to find out what's going on between those two. But overall, you know, good story, I think, leading into it. The match itself was okay. A little blood here and there. But I thought I think the crowd just wasn't into it as strong as I thought they might have been. So especially that there's a lot of support behind Joe. But the right guy, I think, went over on that match. So, finally, our last match of the night, Lethal Lockdown, one of my favorite matches if they do. The winner gets control of TNA. There was already a backstage thing going on where she said she had some kind of insurance policy from New York. So, right away, you're thinking, well, is it someone from the WWE coming in? You know, which some people may have thought, or they put that implying that that was what it was. But it was MVP against Team Dixie. Which, what were your thoughts on the match?
The match is always a little off. I've always had some issues with the match, the concept in general. We all know that it's based off of War Games, but what made War Games work was War Games had two rings. So it wasn't as convoluted and as clustered as it is in just one ring. And another unusual thing about War Games and Lethal Lockdown is the match doesn't end until everyone's been called. So it's just kind of like a bunch of filler. You're just sort of waiting until everyone's been called. It's like the anti-Rumble, if you will, so to speak. So it's definitely it's a little hard to watch sometimes. The match was, you know, it was what it was. I mean, there were a few spots I thought were kind of vicious, like when Aries gave, I think it was Richards, the brainbuster on the steel chair. When Aries went for the 450 on the trash can and Willow got out the way. And speaking of Willow, how did that happen? The lights went out and then the lights came back on and Willow was already on top of the cage. Man, Jeff Hardy's a daredevil. I would not be climbing something like that in the dark. Wow, that dude's crazy. The match itself was fun. There was a lot more wrestling-based spots compared to previous years where it's just a bunch of, you know, mindless chair shots and stuff like that. As far as the surprise, it's funny because I predicted Team Dixie to go over here. Normally because the babyfaces always win every year and the heels always have the advantage. Like you, when Dixie was talking about someone from New York, I was thinking, well, who else is she going to come in? Like, who else is coming in? And it's funny because, like, a minute before the match started, that was when I realized that Bully Ray technically is built from New York. And I was like, fuck, you know what? I didn't even think about Bully. As a matter of fact, to anyone that follows Twitter, unusually, Bully Ray, earlier this week, he actually made a post where he said, after watching the Raw Chicago crowd, it's convinced me to make a very important decision in Impact Wrestling. That was a tweet he made earlier this week. So many fans thought that, oh, okay, he must be going to WWE, when no, in reality, it was really just kind of putting the seats for a babyface turn. All that kind of went through my head a minute before the match. And then when she announced Bully Ray as a special guest ref, I knew at that point he was turning face and MVP was going over, and that's exactly what happened. So, you know, Tim MVP wins. The match is okay. And I guess in storyline, this means that MVP is the owner, and Dixie Carter has lost her power. I think that's right.
It was very clearly stated that the winner gets complete control of TNA's wrestling operations. To me, is he gets to control the matches, and he gets to control the overall show of who he signs. But she owns the company, but she really can't get involved in what he decides to do as far as running the day-to-day operations. He's like the COO.
Okay, we're talking about this. I'm curious because I know that you being a wrestler yourself, what I found the most humorous about Bobby Roode was that if his team won, he got 10% of the company and story. I'm curious, what can you actually do with 10% of a company?
Well,
to
me, he can make decisions in the company. So if he wanted to be a owner, he was going to be, I guess, in a way, he can make his own matches for himself. He could put himself in a title match, and Dixie probably would not stop him. If she wasn't there, he could be in charge. Very odd. It was a very odd way, but in a way, I thought, well, maybe that's why Roode's going to win, because she was going to give him some ownership. So Roode's going to have a different role besides being a wrestler on this show. But that did not turn out that way, because Bully Ray actually betrays Team Dixie and actually helps Team MVP win. So it's quite interesting, because last year at Lockdown is when they revealed the president of the Aces and Eights, which was Bully Ray.
Bully Ray.
Now this year he turns face this year. So quite interesting.
Interesting.
Yes, so it's quite interesting how that whole turned around. But I think I kind of figured MVP was going to win this, only because there'd be no reason to bring the guy in to do this role if they weren't going to go further with it. But also, I think it takes Dixie Carter off the TV. I wouldn't say off the TV, but she will not really be involved as much as she probably has been. You know, at least the first two shows she will, but she'll probably be slowly being kind of like cut off and being put out, as MVP is going to be kind of the guy in charge. And I think that it's a great direction for them. I love the Willow story. I think it's a great way to get Jeff Hardy to do something different than he's done before. And he's already been doing this, I think, for Omega for the last few weeks now, I think, if I'm correct. He's already been kind of...
Yeah, so to the listeners out there, to give you guys like kind of like a description of Willow, you can pretty much, for the most part, tell as Hardy. It's sort of like, he has face paint. He has like these weird black dreads, kind of looks like the Predator from the Predator Alien franchise, and kind of like this weird mask over it. And when he does his moves, it's a lot more creepy, sort of. Like when he did the Twist of Fate, he did like this kind of weird sort of scream, more like a screech sort of. And when he was hit by his opponents, he sort of sold in a way that was sort of like he was having a seizure. It kind of like, he sort of seemed like a zombie, sort of. It's kind of hard to tell because there was so much going on and during the Lockdown. He was the last guy called, and, you know, there was already like seven other dudes in the ring and stuff. I'm curious to see how it comes off when it's just him in the ring, or if it's a one-on-one match. You know, you can definitely get a better visual of it. But overall, I mean, you know, like you said, I'm curious to see what Willow's going to do. You know, Jeff Hardy needs to do something different. He always does something different. That's what I like about Jeff Hardy. He always reinvents himself, you know, just like CM Punk does.
Well, right now he's reinventing himself on the couch. But actually, there were six dudes and two bromans. Let's get that right. I will always take two bromans over six dudes. So I thought the overall match, I thought it was great. I think, I love, like I said, Lethal Lockdown is something different. I like Bully Ray's turn on them, you know, which is quite interesting because the last few weeks he's been dealing with Mr. Anderson. He's kind of been doing some pretty weird shit to talk about his, you know, your husband's not coming home, you know. And he's been such an evil, evil guy. But then he came in there, was a special enforcer, and I kind of had an idea he might turn face, and he did. And it'll be interesting going forward. I think Willow, as Jeff Hardy's character, is great. I think the promos really set up a good tone of what this guy's going to be about. He probably will do the same moves, but he will, you know, just be a different character and different look for him. And I think it does re-energize. It gets a different side of Jeff Hardy out that we have not seen, not even in WWE or anywhere, so other than Omega. So I think it's good to have that he's doing that to reinvent himself, kind of like how I've reinvented myself. I went from being TLD. Now I'm under a mask called Movado Dragon, and that's what I'm doing right now. I reinvented myself, and it got me kind of back into wrestling again, and so I really enjoyed doing it. It's just a way to get myself going. I think that's what he needed to do. So overall, I think MVP did a great job. He was, you know, he's from Miami, you know, sporting the colors down there in Miami. So it was overall, I think it was a good, you know, ending to the show to have, you know, last year was just such a negative thing with the Aces and Eights, and this year it was like a more of a positive. So overall, your thoughts on Lockdown?
Overall, I thought that the undercard was pretty good, very good. Very solid, probably the best undercard that TNA's had. The main events were okay. They did their job, and basically the story was told. And overall, though, I think the show was definitely passable. It was solid, and you can definitely see a new direction in TNA, a youth movement, if you will. And, you know, one of the most annoying things that I hear fans say is they say stuff like, this just lets me know that either fans have either not done their homework or they're just simply younger fans that weren't around, which is okay. But one thing that fans are saying that are annoying me is like, well, TNA, they're not pushing a youth movement because they want to. They're pushing a youth movement because all of their older established guys have left, which is true. However, that's exactly what WWE did in 1994 when Hulk Hogan was gone. Because that steroid thing really gave wrestling a bad look. And so they were trying to focus on a new look, a smaller guy like Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. They weren't using Hogan. Savage took a back seat. Mr. Perfect took a back seat. Ric Flair, he left. So many of those guys that had carried WWF back then were gone. So they had no choice but to start a new generation, and that was kind of when it started. That's why so many people like to look at WrestleMania 10 as the birth of the new generation era. And so when I look at TNA, I see the exact same thing. You know, they're trying to get a new look for their company. I mean, because they're trying to start, like, why are you making fun of a company that's trying to get a new youth movement going? Like, if they can't start one, then you make fun of it. But if you see them in the process of trying to start one and it's working and it's getting over, why are you still making fun of it? I mean, all over this card, there is nothing but new faces, from the Wolves to MVP, to, you know, the Lucha guys, to the New Japan guys, to Samuel Shaw, just all over this card was just, I mean, just look at this card, look at Lockdown from 2014, and look at Lockdown from last year. You can just see a dramatic difference. I mean, they're truly going into a better, positive, more direction.
Yep, in fact, I was looking at that as you were talking about it, and I wanted to kind of compare, see who was here last year, who was new this year, that is not new last year. So I looked it up. I want to go over each name that was not on that card last year. So, and you'll be surprised at how many people I'm going to pick out. So we have, well, I guess I wouldn't count Great Muto because they're more of a special attraction, so I'm not going to really count that. I'm going to call Sandow because he'll be around longer. Samuel Shaw, Ethan Carter III, Tigre Uno, Gunner. Let's see if we got it. And then the Wolves, so Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards. Jesse Geyer was not there last year. I pulled out eight names, right, at MVP, so I guess that would be another one. So there's nine people this year on this show that that were not on last year or not even at least in TNA. That's a lot of people, you know, in one show. That's a big deal. You know, at least I'm looking at it like that. Even if I was to go back and look at Bound for Glory, I would probably have somewhere around that same number. That just shows you what they are doing to have the Wolves in the main event. I guess Willow would count as 10 because it's a different character. So I would.
Yeah, it
say,
is a different character. Yeah, because Willow is not
character.
A WWE-based character. That's based off Omega,
right.
Like you said before. That's a totally new, innovative, brand-new character that has never been seen
right.
before on a mainstream American television wrestling deal. So Willow would count.
Right.
That would be 10.
Yep, so I'll go with 10. So 10 names that are new to this roster, and that's a big thing. You know, I think it's pretty cool. And actually, I thought it was kind of funny just to point out EC3 says no one's hijacking this show, which I thought was quite funny.
EC3 is great. He's great, man. He reads between the lines of his promos. I loved it. When he was in the UK and he was doing that promo of Kurt Angle, and he said the internet is right, and he paused 50% of the time. He
yeah.
does like little short little jabs at that at the internet. He's great. EC3
yeah.
is great. I don't care what anybody says. That's the best character going in TNA right now.
Yeah, at first I had a hard time adapting to it, but you know what? They have pushed Derek Bateman, who he was in WWE, you know, to where he is now. Pretty cool, man. I gotta say, good for him. He deserves it. He was definitely a talent. They dropped the ball on that. So I definitely think this was the right direction for him. I think he'll stay there forever. I don't think he'll leave, you know, just because he's getting such a good reaction. He has a great entrance, good theme song, great attitude, you know, strong heel. I see big things going for him. But I think MVP as in charge of the show will be a strong movement going forward to bring in more people and to make it more of a fan show. And I think he'll look like a really good babyface, runner of the entire show. Because that's always hard to do, and you want to have a babyface, and you want him to – usually it's a heel who runs, like, the whole show, like a general manager. He's going to get to be a face. I think he's a credible, face, and I think it's going to be strong. Overall, I think Lockdown was a good show this year. It wasn't like the big Aces and Eights war last year, but I think they ended the show right with this Lockdown, showcasing a lot of their new talents. And, I would say they're on the right direction. They truly are on the right
yeah.
direction.
I know I'm going to piss off some fans when I say this, but this is just the way I feel. I feel that personally, you know, I think that TNA has actually gotten better since AJ Styles left. Just like I feel that WWE.
Yeah, I would say that even if he was there, I think it would still be good. I just think, you know, it's like he's not, like, it's okay that he's gone because people are, it's kind of like the CM Punk thing. He's gone.
Yeah, just like WWE's gotten
like
better.
We need him back.
Yeah, we don't need him anymore. AJ Styles, like, I love AJ.
I would say it's not like it's better. I would say, like, it's okay for him to be gone because the company could survive without him.
Yeah, you know. AJ, he had done everything he could do.
Mm-hmm.
He had done everything he could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have their next show coming up. I believe it's Texas. Hopefully, I don't know how the crowd size was. I hope they had a good, decent-sized crowd tonight. I think last year they had, like, one of the biggest crowds of all time, I think, at least for them. I don't think they beat that this year.
Their next pay-per-view is Sacrifice.
Slammiversary in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm talking about Slammiversary has been announced as their next big show as far as a live pay-per-view.
According to what I'm looking at,
Sacrifice
is going to be on pay-per-view.
Oh, well, then that's news to me.
I'm trying to see, is this going to be, okay, it says Sacrifice live on pay-per-view. Okay, so this must be a pay-per-view.
Oh, well, maybe they're going back into it. I have no idea. That'd be news to me.
I know what show you're referring to, though. You're talking about Slammiversary 2012. That was, to this date, that is TNA's biggest American-based pay-per-view. I believe that show drew At least 5,000. They had at least 5,000. That was actually a good show. That was a great show, actually, because I remember watching that show, and I was like, wow, this turnout is pretty good. That was in Texas, though. Yeah, that's TNA's biggest crowd in America.
Actually, I'm looking it up actually right now. I do see that it was, but 7,200 fans were at Lockdown last year. So
okay.
I'm reading up right now on Wikipedia, so that's where I'm getting my source from. So I would say that probably will be number two. This will be I don't think this will definitely be anywhere up there. But I think Slammiversary, I think they got to put a lot of money into that, a lot of promotional work into that, because by then, you know, Kurt Angle will be back. You know, they'll have more established characters. So we'll see what happens. And I'm looking forward to a great show tonight, Toph. I always appreciate you coming on. And we appreciate the fans for listening in tonight to our show. Strong showing from TNA tonight. Make sure if you want to go back, you can listen to all the shows on iTunes. You can listen to them here on Blog Talk Radio. We might have a Tuesday show as long as someone logs in and starts the show. Right, Toph?
That's right.
That's right, because we kind of forgot last time, so we apologize for that. But every Tuesday night we have a show. We always do these shows. The next time we are going to be doing this, Toph, is WrestleMania.
Oh, we're doing a WrestleMania post-show, too?
How can we not do it? Last
have
year,
we done one before?
Do
I don't think we have.
No, we did not, because me and Jay last year went to WrestleMania, so no one could do the show. This year, we're going to get to do it. I'm definitely going to be hosting one. We'll probably have a nice big audience for that. And, you know, hopefully the network will be perfectly fine, and hopefully our stream will be fine here on Blog Talk Radio. So, Toph, any final words tonight?
No, I thought it was a solid show, and we'll see you guys Tuesday, hopefully.
Yep, hopefully. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into tonight's show. Make sure you check out ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. That is our website of news-based articles. And if you have I'm going to give you a recommendation, look up hashtag Humor News. You will enjoy some of the great articles, some of the big surprises, including Dolph Ziggler leaving the WWE. You want to find out what I'm talking about? Make sure you go to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Make sure you check us out on iTunes. Check out our YouTube video. We just visited Pro Wrestling Syndicate. Had a great show there. Had a great interviews with a bunch of great people. Check it out with some of the homegrown talent. Had a great time interviewing them. And, of course, the legendary Kevin Matthews selling all of his shit. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We'll see you Tuesday night from us, for me and Toph. This is Will at TLB Wrestling on Twitter, signing off. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.